Good evening and welcome to Accessible Travel Basics, From Planning to Execution. This webinar and tele-learning series is brought to you by CanDo MS and the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. My name is Brian Thompson, Programs Manager for CanDo MS, and I will be your moderator for this evening. CanDo MS is an innovative provider of lifestyle empowerment programs for people living with MS and their support partners. Through our programs, we empower people to manage their disease and move beyond their MS by adopting active and healthy lifestyle behaviors. Please visit the CanDo MS website, www.mscando.org, to learn more about CanDo MS's online and nationwide in-person programs. We are excited to partner with the National MS Society to bring you 15 webinars in 2016. The mission of the National MS Society is to help people affected by MS live their best lives as they stop MS in its tracks, restore what has been lost, and end MS forever. Explore the Society's programs, services, resources, and connection opportunities at nationalmssociety.org. So I'm honored to introduce tonight's speakers who will prove that no challenge is insurmountable and a journey begins with a single step, confidence, and knowledge. Known as the guru of accessible travel, Canning Harrington has covered this niche exclusively for nearly 20 years. She's the founding editor of Emerging Horizons and the author of several accessible travel titles, including the classic Barrier-Free Travel, A Nuts and Bolts Guide for Wheelers and Slow Walkers. Candy's freelance work can be found in everything from New Mobility and Arthritis Today to the Travel Channel. Blogs regularly about accessible travel news, resources, and industry updates on her Barrier-Free Travels blog at www.barrierfreetravels.com. Lisa Companion was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis 18 years ago. Despite the many challenges MS has brought to her life, Lisa is dedicated to continuing to live as fully as possible. Lisa, a psychotherapist in private practice, has been determined and resourceful in finding alternative ways of continuing to move her body in spite of the decline in her physical mobility. She's often seen riding her recumbent bicycle in the beautiful city of Colorado Springs, where she currently resides with her 18-year-old son, Isaac, and her wife, Shauna. So as we start our presentation this evening, we actually want to get your input and to see where everyone is coming from. So we have a polling question, and you can answer it right on the screen there, and we'll get some live results. And the question is, as we talk about traveling, have you traveled since being diagnosed with MS? And if so, how often? So we would like to know, with your life with MS, how often you are able to travel. So you can go ahead and answer one of those choices and click submit, and we'll give it a couple seconds. Lisa.
Great. Thank you so much, Brian. Hi. As Brian said, my name is Lisa Kempinen. I'm a psychotherapist living and practicing in Colorado Springs. I was diagnosed with MS 18 years ago, and like most of you, I definitely want to say that I look 1,000 times better than I feel. I feel really bad most days, and I know when I look at my pictures, I think, wow, I look pretty good. So I think all of you know that there's benefits and not benefits to looking good when you don't feel good. I'm excited to be sharing my experiences traveling with you today, and I also want to say that I know each of us is really different, that we have different symptoms, different abilities, different situations, and some of the pictures that I'm sharing, I'm not even sure that this year those would be accurate for me anymore. Nevertheless, they're pictures that are meaningful, and I'm glad to share them with you. I love to travel. I've always loved to travel, and I love just to move and go. And MS often leaves me feeling as if I'm stuck and that everybody else is moving and going. And I'm sure I'm not saying anything that you don't also experience as well. So I think traveling gives me the sense that I'm not stuck, that I'm still moving and I'm still going. So I really don't care where I'm going to as long as I'm just going. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and so my lens is always through the eyes of a therapist. So when I think of travel, I also considering travel and what that means with my family and friends and as someone with MS. We all have some things in common with our desire to travel. And a lot of us have expectations and expense, and having MS attached to travel is a whole different deal. And traveling is really fun, but it can be stressful just by virtue of it being in a different place, that you don't know what's going on and that you've spent a lot of money on it. And that's true for everybody, but with people with MS, I think it creates a whole different layer of challenge. Just so you know, they introduced me as a world traveler, and I wanted to tell you, I have not been trekking the jungles of Borneo with MS, just so you know. I do travel fairly often. In fact, this week I'm headed to Crested Butte to an adaptive sports center to try out canoeing. So I hope that goes well. I anticipate it well. I'm going to move the next slide. So also, as most of you know, with MS, I find that everything I do takes more planning, and that is true with traveling. So whereas 20 years ago I used to just throw a bathing suit and some clothes in a suitcase, I can't do that anymore. And I recognize that I start thinking about what I want to take many weeks before I actually pack. And it's really helpful for me to put things in a suitcase little bits at a time because I'm just too exhausted. Some days just taking the suitcase out of the garage is all I can do. And the next day I might throw in a few things. So I don't try and do it all at once. I usually get a doctor's note that says I have MS and says what my abilities are. No one has ever asked me for it, but I get it from my doctor. It's really easy. He never complains about it. I think he's happy that I'm traveling. And it really helps so that if I want to go scuba diving or if just anybody has concerns when they watch me walk or that they have a doctor's note so they don't have to feel scared about my limitations and so that I don't have to explain a lot. And that's really helpful. Let me move the slide again. So you could always call the resort and the hotel and ask to get familiar with the property, which is really, really helpful. You can ask them about how often they have worked with people with disabilities. I know Candy will go over some of that stuff. And by all means, if you have a disabled placard, put a note in your suitcase and remind yourself to bring it because it's no fun to show up at a different state or location and not have your placard. This is me on my favorite beloved bike, which is a lot of people use it for a variety of things, illnesses, but MS is great because you can pedal with your arms and your legs or just your arms or your legs. And if you haven't been to Garden of the Gods in Colorado Springs, that is a picture of it, and I highly recommend it. However you get there, it is absolutely gorgeous, and I'm happy that it's in my backyard. I'm going to turn it over to Candy now, and she's going to talk about Disabled Air Traveler's Bill of Rights.
Thank you, Lisa. That was a gorgeous picture of Garden of the Gods there. I'm going to lead off here tonight with air travel because I have to tell you, it's a subject that I get the most questions and the most complaints about. Now, I always try to encourage people to know their rights so they know what to expect once they get on the airplane. And when I'm talking about your rights, I'm talking about your rights under the Air Carrier Access Act. So in keeping with that theme, I've created what I call my Disabled Air Traveler's Bill of Rights. And I'd like to go over a few of those rights with you tonight and hopefully offer you some insight about the realities of air travel and give you some tips to help you along your way. Your first right is you have the right to curbside wheelchair assistance. Now, sometimes you can do absolutely everything perfectly in the reservation process, and it just doesn't happen. You get to the airport, there's no wheelchair curbside for you. So I always encourage people, when you make your reservation, ask for the local number of the airline so you can call for assistance if you get stuck curbside and there's no wheelchair. And when all else fails, tweet about it. You know, you may laugh, but social media actually rocks today, and the airlines have employees dedicated to monitoring their Twitter and their Facebook feeds. So if something isn't going so well, give them a shout-out, and don't forget to hashtag them. And last, don't let them take the wheelchair away from you at the gate. Tell them you need it to make down the jet bridge. Well, why do you want to do this? Very simply, if there's a gate change, you'll have a way to get there. But if they take the wheelchair away, you won't. Your next right, you have the right to remain in your own wheelchair all the way to the door of the aircraft. Now, this is called gate checking, and it's absolutely positively something you want to do. Why? Well, first and foremost, you're going to be more comfortable, obviously, in your own wheelchair. But more importantly, the less time the airlines have your wheelchair, the less time they have to lose or damage it. Now, the reality of this situation is that you have to have non-spillable batteries in order to gate check a wheelchair or scooter. If you have spillable batteries in your wheelchair, you absolutely have to check your wheelchair at check-in and then transfer to an airport wheelchair. There's just no other option. Now, lithium-ion batteries, they are another story altogether. These are the batteries that are in the new compact travel scooters that everybody's using. Now, the law allows for them now, but there are a lot of restrictions. So if you have lithium-ion batteries, you're going to want to call your air carrier in advance and check with them, ask them about the packaging of spare batteries, and ask them also about their inspection and stowage policies. Your next right. You have the right to fly. The airlines cannot deny you passage simply because you are disabled. They can require, however, that you travel with a safety assistant if they feel that you can't assist with your own emergency evacuation. Now, the only duty that that safety assistant has is to assist a disabled person in an emergency. And the great thing about this is anyone can be a safety assistant. The unfortunate reality of the situation is some gate agents just don't know the law. So if you get to the gate and the gate agent says you cannot travel unaccompanied, all you have to do is ask another passenger to act as your safety assistant. Problem solved. Your next right, this is a very important one. You have the right to relieve yourself on a flight if nature calls. Now, accessible laboratories are required on all post-1992 U.S. wide-body jets. Wide bodies are the ones with two aisles up the center. If they have an accessible laboratory, they also have to carry an onboard wheelchair to get you to and from that accessible laboratory. Now, the reality, and I'm sure if any of you have been in any of these accessible laboratories, they can be quite small. Unfortunately, they just have to be large enough to accommodate an onboard wheelchair, and they also have to have toilet grab bars. So I encourage people, look to the newer wide-body jets. I have to say I've seen the accessible laboratories in the 787 Dreamliner, and they are dreamy. They're large. Airbus 320, this is a single-aisle aircraft, but the newer models also have these new SpaceFlex laboratories, and they're twice the size of a standard laboratory hooked together. So they're very, very spacious. I also encourage people, check out the seating maps on seatguru.com. That's SEATGURU.com to see the relative size of the accessible laboratories. And always, always, always double check with the flight attendant to make sure that the onboard wheelchair is aboard before you take off. Your next right, You have the right to compensation should your wheelchair be lost or damaged. The reality of the situation is, on domestic flights, the airline liability limit for damaged assistive devices is the purchase price, not the replacement cost. Internationally, it's a flat $1,685. So, if you have an older wheelchair or scooter that costs more to replace today, you're going to be on the hook for the difference. You're only going to be reimbursed for the purchase price on domestic flights or $1,685 on international flights. So, check your homeowner's policy. A lot of policies do cover assistive devices. If not, get a high deductible baggage travel insurance that does include assistive devices. Now, my last ride I'm going to go over with you tonight is a very important one, too. You have the right to have your problems addressed by an individual who understands your rights under the Air Carrier Access Act. The airlines are required to have a complaints resolution official, a CRO, on duty during their operating hours, and this is a person that knows the law and is trained to solve access-related problems. So, always remember to ask for the CRO when you run into a wall, and if perchance the airline employee you are talking with has no idea what or who the CRO is, ask to speak to a supervisor because they always know about the CRO. So if you only take one thing away from my Disabled Air Travelers Bill of Rights, remember the CRO. I'd also like to point out a few resources. Air Carrier Access Act, read it, know it. I always encourage people to read the law, not somebody else's interpretation of the law. And this is very, very approachable. It's done in Q&A format, and it will give you a really good idea of what to expect. Another good resource, the DOT hotline. Now, you can give these people a call if at any time you're having problems making a reservation or any other access problems with the airline. And my final resource, if things don't go quite well, there's a DOT ACAA complaint form. Fill it out and let the DOT know what happened. And now Lisa, I think, has some air travel tips of her own to share.
I do. Thanks so much, Candy. As Candy mentioned, and I think it's a great point of always asking for a wheelchair, I actually had that happen where I was stuck without something in the gate change, so it's a super, super good idea. I also know for myself, and this may be true for some of you, that sometimes I don't want to be in my wheelchair. Sometimes I don't have a choice because my body just won't let me, but sometimes I do have a choice, and it's really important to me that I'm able to advocate for myself and tell my family or tell the TSA agent that I would rather stand. It might take more time, it might be more difficult, but somehow it just allows me to feel as though I still get to make some choices about how I act and behave and use my body. With that being said, one of the things that I really want to mention is that it seems as though talking to your family members or your travel partners before you even get to TSA is really, really important. It's important because to be able to talk about who's going to pick up my stuff out of the bins and make sure I have my wedding ring if I'm sitting in a wheelchair and I can't get over to the bin to get it. It seems as though TSA can often be fairly chaotic. And so my family and friends have found that it's been really helpful to kind of have some designated ideas of how things are going to go down as we go through that whole experience. Who's going to push the wheelchair? Who's going to stop and get the Coke? Who's going to look for the bathroom? And one of the things that's also really helpful is that my family will often get mad at MS because it's so, so unbelievably frustrating and challenging. But it's really helpful that my wife or my son says, you know what, I'm not mad at you. I'm mad at MS that you can't pull the suitcase behind you. So that's a really important part of traveling, is being able to talk to your family and friends. One of the things that's super helpful for me is that I bring a travel mug or I ask the flight attendant for the whole can of soda. My hands really tremor, and I've had the experience of trying to grab one of those flimsy plastic cups and dumping it all over the person next to me. So So I just usually ask them to give me a whole can, or I carry a travel mug if I want coffee, so I don't have to worry about that. All right, I'm going to transfer it over to Candy again, and she has some other ideas and helpful hints.
Oh, thank you, Lisa. I think it's also important to touch on the TSA, the Transportation Security Administration. These are the folks that are in charge of security at our airport. Now, they are a government agency, and they are not subject to the Air Carrier Access Act or even the Americans with Disabilities Act. But the good news is they have their own security guidelines and procedures in place for people with disabilities, and they're very, very clearly laid out. They have an excellent website, which I've listed here, and I highly recommend that you check it out before you head to the airport. That said, there are some important things to remember about the TSA checkpoint. First, you don't have to take off your shoes if you are physically unable to do so. If you can't take off your shoes, just tell the screening person you're unable to do it because of your disability. Also, you are entitled to a private screening. So if you don't want to be wanded and patted down in front of everybody in the airport, just tell the TSA agent you'd like a private screening. Also very important to know, you can take your liquid meds with you. Now, even if that's more than 3 ounces, yes, you can take them through security. The thing is, you have to inform the screener in advance. So don't just set the meds down there on the conveyor belt. Tell them you have liquid meds, and they will tell you what to do with it. Now, another very important thing, if you can't do something during the screening process, just tell the agent you are physically unable to do it. Don't try to do it. It's not a challenge. Another resource, really good, TSA Cares hotline. In 72 hours advance notice, you can get airport-specific information about security. So, for example, if you're wondering if your syringes are going to get through security at Sacramento Airport, there's anything special you need to do, this is the place to call. I think Lisa also has a few tips of her own about the TSA.
I certainly do. Thanks, Candy. So, like I mentioned, my hands really tremor, and in planning, I usually plan to have all my documents together, paperclip, so that I'm not at the TSA counter and fumbling around and trying to find them and they're falling on the floor, which is would be pretty typical for me if it didn't have some planning before that. And I think with MS, it's just so important to ask for what it is that you need. I can't reiterate that enough, but to be able to say, I want to stand up, I want to put on my own shoes, I don't want to put on my shoes, I want you to get this stuff out of the bin. Sometimes it's really hard to ask for what you need because we people with MS tend to have so many needs. But I do think that for everybody, it does go so much smoother, and it's really helpful. I often bring dollar bills for the people that push me. This guy happened to push me around the Dallas airport for quite a long time, and I was tremendously embarrassed because I hadn't stuck any dollar bills in my pocket, and he actually made it pretty fun. Oh, the other thing I should mention that somebody told me upon diagnosis is that I bring a baby bottle. I have had Copaxone for 18 years, and so when I travel, I bring a baby bottle, and that's where I put my used shots in, which is really, I thought it was a great tip, and it's worked for me for a long time, so feel free to use that. All right, Candy, now you're back on, and you can talk about finding an accessible room.
Yeah, thanks, Lisa. And that's really a great tip about the baby bottle, too, because some people don't know what to do with their needles. Well, anyway, we're going to shift focus here because getting there is only half the battle, but finding a truly accessible place to stay is the other half. Now, although the ADA mandates access in hotels in the U.S., that level depends on the size and the age of the property. So with that in mind, I'd like to give you a few tips for finding a truly accessible room that meets your needs. First and foremost, call the property directly. Always deal direct whenever possible. And when you call them, never just ask for an accessible or an ADA-compliant room, because different rooms have different features. What you want to do is you want to get that reservationist to describe the access in the room. In other words, what features does it have? Very important to note, if you need a roll-in shower, you're going to have to specifically ask for one, because they are not standard in all accessible rooms. And I will tell you also, hotels with less than 50 rooms, they are not required to have roll-in showers. So if you don't request a room with a roll-in shower when you make that reservation, you very well may be stuck with a room with a tub-shower combination. It happens a lot. Now, if the reservations person can't help you, ask to speak to somebody in housekeeping, because these are the people that are in and out of those rooms on a daily basis. They know what's in them. Better yet, ask them to snap you a few pictures. Technology is great today. Let's use it. Ask them for a picture of that roll-in shower. You also want to make sure that they block the room when you make your reservation. Now, blocking the room simply means that a specific room is set aside for a specific person. All U.S. hotels are required to block accessible rooms upon reservation. This has been the law since 2012. Does it always happen? No. That's why you need to ask. And if they hem and haw about it or say, maybe not, I don't know, well, if they have a stayover, we can't, find another property, because it's going to do absolutely no good to have a reservation if that accessible room is not there when you arrive. Bed height is a big issue. If it's an issue for you, you're going to need to ask for measurements, because currently, absolutely no regulations on bed height. And as somebody who looks at thousands of accessible rooms every year, there's a huge range out there. I've seen everything from 15 inches all the way up to 37. So ask. You also want to ask a lot of questions about walk-in showers. Now, this is a cutesy little term that's been coined by the hospitality industry. It means absolutely nothing. It could mean that there's a low-step shower. It could mean a roll-in shower. It could mean a tub-shower combination. And I even had one uppity manager tell me one day that because I could walk into the bathroom, whatever was in it was considered a walk-in shower. So, again, you hear that term, a little red flag should go up and ask a lot of questions. Now, this is all good and well for the U.S. When you're booking overseas, you need to understand a few little nuances about language and even some cultural nuances. Asia, never ever ask yes or no questions when booking a room, because they will always, always, always answer yes, because saying no is considered rude. And this is pretty much a good blanket rule for any question you ask in Asia. Now, over in Europe, they have, in continental Europe, they have accessible rooms. Now, these are rooms that have pathway access, good pathway access for wheelchairs, wide doors, and they also have adapted rooms. Now, the adapted rooms are the ones that have the adapted features, things like roll-in showers, things like grab bars. So if you need an accessible room, if you need a roll-in shower, you are going to have to ask for an adapted room, not an accessible room. It's really, really, really hard habit to break, because we call them accessible rooms here in the U.S. Over in Europe, you also have to understand the ground floor versus the first floor. The ground floor in Europe is at street level. The first floor is up a flight of stairs. Why does this matter? Well, a lot of the older European hotels do not have elevators. And some of them, even the ones that do, have very, very small elevators, not big enough for a wheelchair to get in. So if you can't do the stairs, you're going to have to book a room on the ground floor, not the first floor. So remember, ground floor rooms in Europe. Now, I think Lisa has some of her own tips about finding accessible lodging.
I do. Thanks, Candy. I want to back it up just for a second. So we all know that MS can be very humiliating and embarrassing, and I'm just going to put that out there so that I can feel free to talk about how important it has been for me on the airplane to ask for a seat near the bathroom. I oftentimes have, I go to the bathroom, and 5 seconds later, I have to go again, or I certainly don't want to have to climb over people because I can't hold it very well. And so I want to make sure that I'm talking about how important that's been for me. I know that that's a common issue. And if I thought that my body was probably going to be okay, I might still wear a poise pad and take a wet washcloth just so that if an emergency happened, I wouldn't have to sit on a flight for 4 hours and be concerned that I didn't have anything to take care of myself. In regards to a hotel or a resort, and the shower, I have most often not asked about the shower, but I have grabbed a plastic chair off the porch or the balcony, and I put it in the shower. I definitely have to sit in the shower, and so I think a plastic chair is just fine, and I think it's pretty resourceful. I've also noticed in a hotel or a resort that I like to be in control of the temperature. And what that means to my family is basically we live in a meat locker. So I always ask for extra blankets because everyone else is going to freeze if I'm in control of the temperature. I've also had a bartender before wonder if he could serve me another margarita because I look like I'm really drunk even when I'm not. And so prior to going to the bar, I'll usually tell the bartender that I'm not drunk and that I'm capable of handling 2 margaritas. In addition, I've also told lifeguards that maybe they want to watch out for me, but that I'm a fairly good swimmer and I won't look stable when I exit the water, but if I fall on sand and I'm okay. So I'm pretty assertive about telling people what's going on with me. And it seems to really be helpful in regards to getting them to relax and allowing me to have a more, just a more comfortable time. The same thing with my family. Recently, we were in Mexico, and I know my mom was really concerned about me being hot. And so we had to talk about that beforehand so that she didn't have to worry about me, and she trusted that I was going to be able to let her know if I needed something in regards to a temperature. In a hotel or resort, I would definitely find out how to access emergency and where a doctor is if you need one, how to do that. Because it's better to do that up front before you get in a situation that you're kind of panicked. So if you don't listen to anything else I say today, this slide actually says what I want you to hear. What I know about myself is that I wouldn't do anything if I thought that I'd be able to do it the way I used to do it. And if you ditch the self-imposed restrictions and just let yourself be where you're at, use the materials that you need, such as those sticks. Yes, people stare at me walking down the beach with the sticks. However, what I really care about is that I'm walking down the beach. I'm never going to see these people again. And at the end of my vacation, I hardly want to think that I kept myself from enjoying everything as fully as I could just because it made other people uncomfortable. So forget about how you used to do it. Just figure out how you can still do it. I've been known to scoop my butt way down to the water or crawl, actually, to the water if I can't stand up and get in. So I just do what I have to do because I've spent the money and I want to have a good time.
And we'll move on to fatigue, which I know was a big issue for a lot of people. We got a lot of questions about that.
Thanks, Brian. Well, as Brian said, I'd like to talk about fatigue. I actually call it the F factor, fatigue, because air travel can be very, very fatiguing, and so can MS. And I only have to tell you guys, but with MS, you never know when you're going to have a bad day. And unfortunately, it very well may be that day that you have to head off to the airport. Now, on the plus side of the things, you do have control over the planning process, and there are a few things that you can do to make your travel experience a little less fatiguing. So I'm going to offer a few tips using the acronym SLOW, S-L-O-W, so you remember to slow down. S in slow down stands for start early. Get to the airport early. I understand 2 hours prior to departure seems like a long time, but here's the deal. If you're having a bad day and you need to take breaks along the way, you're going to be very, very glad you have that extra time. If you don't need it, just take a book and chill by the gate. You don't want to stress because stress is very fatiguing. The L in slow down stands for leave ample connecting time. Not just the recommended time, the 20 minutes, that's the norm at some airports. It absolutely won't do if you have to change terminals and get wheelchair assistance. And I also have to remind you, if you're getting wheelchair assistance at a connecting airport, you're going to be the last person off the airplane, and a wheelchair isn't always there. So this is going to add some extra time, too. I usually recommend 1.5 hours. Again, take a book and relax at the gate, or do what I do, people watch. Airports are excellent places to people watch. The O in slow down stands for only book flights in off-peak times. You want to avoid the busy or hectic air travel times. So when is that? The first flight of the day, that 6 a.m. flight, it is chucky jam-packed with business travelers. You want to try and take the second flight, that 8 a.m. flight, or even try an afternoon flight if you can swing it. You also want to avoid Mondays and Fridays. Again, very heavy business travel day. Wednesdays are great. They're less crowded, and the great thing is you can also get a cheaper airfare then. You also want to avoid that very, very last flight of the day, because if it's delayed or canceled, you might have to overnight in a connecting city, and that can be very, very fatiguing. And the W in slow down stands for wheelchair. Always, always, always reserve an airport wheelchair, even if you don't normally use one at home. And this is probably going to be the single hardest thing for everyone to do. But these airports are massive, and just getting to your gate can require a lot of walking. You don't want to overdo it and then just be too tired to have fun with your friends and family on your vacation. I also have to say on a personal note, this is a do-as-I-say tip, not as-I-do tip. I broke my foot a couple years ago when I was visiting Little Rock, and I was in full tilt boogie denial. I got to the airport. It's purple. It's the size of a watermelon. But no, Candy does not need an airport wheelchair. So I got to the gate, and I was actually quite smug about it. I remember telling my husband, gee, I made it. I told you so. Anyway, a couple minutes later, they announced a gate change. I had to walk another 30 gates in 10 minutes to catch my flight. I was almost in tears by the time I got to my gate. So always, always, always remember my sad little story and reserve that airport wheelchair. I'd also like to talk a little bit about temperature sensitivity, the problem a lot of people with MS encounter. And I have a few resources, and I am going to start with the cheapest one and go to the most expensive. Cheapest one, cooling bandanas. You can make these or buy them. They cost about $11 if they're made, less, of course, if you're a do-it-yourselfer. They're really wonderful. You just soak them in water. They plump up like a sausage, and you can put them around your neck. You're good for about 2 to 3 hours. They do help keep you cool. I have two links here. The top link is where you can go if you want to make your own. They'll have instructions there. Or the bottom link, you can buy them at Polar Breeze or just Google cooling bandanas for some other options. Another way to cool off, cooling towelettes. Now, this is only one brand. There's lots out there. Some are being marketed as hot flash wipes, so you're going to want to look for them in the feminine hygiene section. Sorry, guys. But you rub them on the back of your neck. They're herbal, and it prevents overheating. Worked wonders for me in Belize. Last, the cooling vest. Most expensive option, it's activated like the bandanas. You submerge it, then you put it on. This is an Arctic Heat vest. It's lightweight. It's actually recommended for people with MS, and some MS chapters even have them in their loan closets, so check with your local chapter before heading out on your vacation. And now I think Lisa has some tips of her own to share about fatigue and temperature sensitivity.
I do. Thanks, Candy. You know, maybe the rest of you will agree with me. It drives me crazy that they call it fatigue. I was 9 months pregnant in about 104-degree Los Angeles heat wave, and that was fatigue. What I have now feels like I don't even know what the name of it is. It feels like picking up a hairbrush some days can feel like picking up a boulder. So I just have to say that. Certainly slowing down is a huge part of that, something I'm not very fond of, but I do try and get myself to do it because I know that it works. If I'm going somewhere hot, one of the best things that I've done is I've brought a raft, a blow-up raft, or they have rafts that twist, that lay really flat in your suitcase, and I can just plop that in the pool or I can put it in the ocean, and that is such a great way to cool off. I also oftentimes will pull the lounge chair or ask someone to pull the lounge chair down to the water for me so that most of my body is in the water, but my book is not in the water. If I'm in Colorado winter, it becomes really important to have snow boots with extra traction because it's so slippery. So whatever the issue is in regards to being too hot or being too cold, I try and think ahead and bring things that are going to be useful, like a wrap on the airplane, because different parts of my body can get really hot and different parts of my body can get really cold. So I'm always trying to pay attention to what might help me make up some kind of something that feels more comfortable. Hope that made sense. All right. Okay, Candy, thank you. Go ahead.
Great, good tips. You know, and we've been talking about the nuts and bolts here, and it's certainly very essential to learn those. But this is the fun part now, because we get to talk about fun places that we can go and see and do. And so I've put together some of my favorite cool, accessible travel finds, and I just want to encourage everyone to think outside of the box. Up first is accessible ballooning. Up and Away Ballooning up in Sonoma Valley, Northern California, they have wheelchair-accessible balloon flights. They depart from the Windsor Airport. They have roll-on access. You can roll right onto the gondola. As you can see, they have plexiglass windows here that are lowered, so if you're sitting in a wheelchair, no problem. You can see right out. Manual wheelchairs are fine. You roll on just like this lady. Power wheelchairs, you're going to have to transfer to a manual wheelchair, but they are provided. They also have accessible transportation from the landing site. I know there's a step stool here, but there's also a lift in the van. And they also serve a beautiful brunch in the vineyards after touchdown. So Up and Away Ballooning. Another favorite of mine, Iceland. Iceland's a hot travel destination today, and they have some excellent airfares from SFO. Iceland Taxi Tours here, along with Iceland Unlimited, both offer accessible sightseeing tours in Iceland from the capital city. These are day tours. And they also have wonderful rooms with roll-in showers in Iceland. It's a very accessible country. The Blue Lagoon, you want to go to if you're in Iceland. It's a must. They have level access to the changing rooms, lift access to the inside pool, and from there you can just walk or swim to the outside pool. If you don't want to do that, they have a water wheelchair, and you can enter from the sloped beach area. Their waters are 98 to 102 degrees. You sit there like this lady and you slather on the silica mud. It's like the ultimate facial. They also have a really cool swim-up bar that serves nice blue drinks. Also in Iceland, this is Geyser, and this is where their geothermal activity, they're very famous for their geothermal activity over there. And this is Stoker Geyser. It's somewhat similar to our Old Faithful in that it erupts regularly. They have paved pathways which lead around the geyser, so you can get a beautiful view of it gushing up to 30 feet in the air. And last but certainly not least, there's Gullfoss Waterfalls. This is one of my favorite. I think it's Iceland's most spectacular waterfall. Translated loosely, it means Golden Falls. They have an accessible boardwalk that leads out to an overlook, and they also have a good view from the parking lot if you don't want to do that. So consider Iceland. Myakka River State Park. This is near Sarasota. We just visited on our last road trip in Southwest Florida. One of the great things about this park is they have newly renovated CCC cabins. Now, this is cabin one. It's the accessible one, as you can tell with the ramp. It's just $70 a night, two double beds, a full kitchen, nice accessible bathroom. There's plenty to do in the park, including this accessible pontoon boat. You want to stick to dry land. They also have an accessible tram tour. And my favorite is their accessible bird walk. Great place for birders. You can even catch some bald eagles down there in the morning. Now, if you're more of a beach person, you want to give San Diego a try. They have Power Beach wheelchairs for loan. Now, these are great because they allow for independent access on the beach. They operate just like a power wheelchair with a joystick. Obviously, more independent, so you don't have to have somebody pushing you around on the beach. And they're available at Imperial, Oceanside, Silver Strand, and Mission Beaches. Now, you can't take these in the water for obvious reasons, but they also have hippocamp surf chairs. These can go into the water. I'm pushing my friend here, but you can also self-propel. So consider San Diego. Another favorite of mine, Safari West. I call it the next best thing to visiting Africa. It's a 400-acre drive-through wildlife park. It's in the middle of the California wine country. And they have a three-hour safari tour. And the first part is the driving tour in this accessible vehicle. It's lift-equipped and can accommodate wheelchair users. Second part of the tour is a walking tour that's through their accessible paths and even through their accessible aviary. And best of all, ultimate safari adventure, you can stay overnight in their tent cabin, and it does have a rolling shower. This is great. You fall asleep. You're being serenaded to the sounds of the jungle. You're entirely safe. And my favorite part, it's right across from the giraffe enclosure, so you can sit, enjoy the sunset, and have a glass of wine and watch the beautiful animals. Next up, Safari West. Now, I mean, Grand Canyon West. That was Safari, whatever. Grand Canyon West. This is the Grand Canyon Skywalk, located in Grand Canyon West. It's on Hualapai land. It's not really part of the national park. They've created this wonderful glass floor skywalk. You just walk right out there over and take a great view of the canyon. They also have accessible transportation to and from the visitor center. You can't really drive there. And if you want to overnight, they have a nice accessible cabin with a very spacious bathroom. Now, the great thing about Hualapai Ranch, right near the skywalk, but after the day visitors leave, there's only 19 cabins there, and it's very, very peaceful. So check out their website for some packages. And last but not least here, we have yurting. Give yurting a try. Yurts are great. They're round platform tents, wooden frames and floors, and they're popping up everywhere. Now, this one is at Snow Mountain Ranch, 80 miles west of Denver. It has a ramp inside, very roomy, queen-size beds, two bunk beds, electricity. There's a bathhouse nearby with a roll-in shower, and they also have a very nice swimming pool. It's a YWCA facility, cement ramp, and a water wheelchair. Great for a family vacation, just $99 a night. I think Lisa has a few of her favorites to share, too.
I do. Thanks, Candy. It looks like I've got some new places to go, thanks to you. You know, I wanted to share that I had a friend say to me that she was invited to go to the beach last year, but she couldn't go because if she was at the beach, she was afraid that she wouldn't be able to get up and go to the bathroom if she was down at the water. And I told her that it actually was probably a great thing, that if she was at the water's edge, that it's the perfect place to go pee and to keep a cup or a bucket next to you, pick up some water from the ocean and rinse yourself off, and nobody will know the difference. I know that might seem horrific to some of you. I grew up on the beach. I can guarantee you that people do that in the water sometimes. But I guess my point is the fact that there's some really humiliating things with MS, and sometimes if you want to be able to travel, you just have to kind of suck up and figure out how to do what you want to do. As I said on this, I don't really have a favorite travel destination. Certainly places with water have been really helpful for me because I was born close to the beach, and so I'm kind of a water baby to begin with. I also don't have any symptoms when I'm in the water. Like, if I could figure out how to live underwater, I would. And I really like scuba diving. My tingling goes away. My burning goes away. I'm not wobbling because I'm just swimming. I don't have to swim in a straight line. So I get to feel like a normal person, and I also get to feel strong under the water. So any place that I can go scuba diving is really, really great for me. I actually last year found an agency in Mexico that was willing to work with me and not have me put on scuba gear in the boat because I was afraid I would lose my balance. So the guy was great and actually lifted all my scuba gear into the water and helped me put it on in the water so I had buoyancy. He actually told me that he had taken a paraplegic scuba diving. So there are places that will also work with you to be resourceful to do what you want to do. The next picture is of me in Maui, just sitting like a normal person, enjoying the beautiful sunset. And Candy, there you go with your green, what is that, a penguin?
It's my green.
I'll let you explain that.
It's the mascot. It was right in Arkansas, the same trip where I broke. That was before I actually broke my foot, so I'm ambulatory there. But anyway, I have five tips. I'm just going to conclude tonight with my five tips to take away about accessible travel, hopefully to help you with your future travels. Number one, start slow. Plan your first trip close to home just to work out the bugs. Number two, never just ask for an accessible or an ADA-compliant room. Ask for specific access features you need. And remember, not all accessible rooms have a roll-in shower. Number three, expect the best, but plan for emergencies. Always have a contingency plan. Number four, if you run into any problems when traveling by air, always remember to ask for the CRO. And last but certainly not least, learn the laws so you know what to expect. After all, you can't tell when something is going wrong if you really don't know what right is. And you can also check out my Emerging Horizons website for more travel resources, tips, and books, and that's at www.emerginghorizons.com. And now I think Lisa has some parting tips as well.
I do have some parting tips. So some of these have been really useful. Some of them I may have mentioned. It's definitely great at the end of the day to have a post-conversation with your travel partners, whether that be friends or family, and talk about what worked and what didn't work and how you want it to look different the next day. I definitely have a code word with my family if I'm in a public place because especially if I'm in the heat, I can't get up and walk to the bathroom. And so instead of having to yell at them, I have to go to the bathroom, I'll say, wow, I see a seagull, which means come get me and help me to the bathroom. Probably one of the best things that I figured out is I think it's like $5.95 and it's on Amazon. It's a waterproof cell phone case. And I just am able to keep my phone. I'm an avid picture taker, which makes that really great. But it also enables me to have a phone near. So if my family wants to go somewhere that and leave me in the pool, I'm not stuck. I actually can call them, and I don't have to worry about dropping my cell phone in the water, which could easily happen for me. I usually pack a travel bottle of Woolite because it keeps me from having to pack more than necessary, and then I'm just able to, you know, rinse whatever it is that I need out and dry it. And I think that's about it. For most, what I can really say is have a good time. Cry, scream, get mad that you have MS, and then go live your life and live it for you. Don't live it for other people. You'll never see the people again that you travel with. And the last thing I would say, how I handle being the center of attention, is I decided a long time ago that it was going to just allow me to talk about MS because I want a cure. And I don't look like I have MS. So if people wonder what's wrong with me, it gives me an opportunity to say to them, you know you're looking at me and you think that I look strange, and I want to let me tell you about MS. There's lots of us that have it. There's lots of us that look like me. And I hope that you'll, next time someone asks you to donate to research, you'll do that. So I've used being the center of attention, as uncomfortable as it is, I've used that to actually talk about MS because I'm determined to find a cure for me and for you as well. Thanks so much for allowing me to share my experiences. The next picture, I'll switch it, is the last picture is that's my son and myself. Under the sea in Cozumel, which was incredible. So, thanks again.
And thank you so much, Candy and Lisa. Candy really is the foremost expert on accessible travel. To have her join us is really special. And Lisa, having MS and understanding those challenges, hopefully that was helpful to everyone just to get that perspective. So we have about 10 minutes for some question and answer. We'll try to get to as many as possible. And if we don't get to your question, I'll talk to you at the end about other ways that we can try to answer your question here at CanDo MS. But I guess the first question, we actually got this a couple times, is reserving an airport wheelchair. We talked about the importance of that. But who exactly would you go about contacting to make sure that the wheelchair is in place at the right time, at the right place? What are the steps to actually making that reservation?
Well, you can do that when you make your reservation. A lot of the airlines ask if you make it online, if you have any special needs. Some of them have a box you can just check for airport wheelchair. You can also call if you do your reservations by phone. I guess some people still do. You can request that when you make your reservation. I will also say if you don't make your reservation, they do have a lot of them, and so you can go up to the desk when you check in and ask for one, and usually you'll be able to get one. You might have to wait a little bit for it, though.
Excellent. Thank you. This next question would probably be good for Lisa. As far as the physical symptoms and tolls of traveling, so this one writer suggested when they fly that they experience swelling and bladder retention and digestive issues and just issues with sort of the noise and sensory overload. As far as those physical symptoms, would you have any recommendations for dealing or controlling with those?
Well, I guess my first thought is if that was myself, I would probably try and just add in an extra day after I arrived wherever I was, just to give myself a whole day that I didn't really count as vacation time, that I just allowed myself to do what it is that I would do at home to make myself more comfortable and get more rest. So I think if I was doing a quick 4-day trip to Mexico and I, had to spend one day making myself feel better, I might think twice about that. But that's probably what I would do, is see if I could squeak in a little bit more time and just kind of, define it as rest and repair time.
Great. Thank you. Candy, you mentioned there's no ADA guideline for the height of beds. How about for toilets? We had a person ask if there's an appropriate size for a toilet, and if a toilet is too low, is it appropriate to ask for a booster?
Well, the answer is yes. We do have guidelines, 16 to 19 inches. Some people do like higher toilets, so if you have problems standing up, Usually you like a little higher toilet. Wheelchair users sometimes like the lower models. They do have toilet risers. A lot of hotels have them. Ask when you make a reservation if they can provide a toilet riser. It's a very cheap piece of equipment, and especially a lot of the high-end hotels, very happy to do it.
Excellent. Now, Lisa, you mentioned the handicap placard. Do you know if that works overseas or if there's anything special that you should go about obtaining specifically to go overseas that doesn't work domestically?
No, I'm sorry. I don't know about that overseas. I know that different states in the United States have different rules with it, such as, yeah, maybe candy.
I do know the answer to that one, even though I didn't mention it. Yes, we have reciprocal agreements with most of the EU, definitely Canada, New Zealand, Australia. So, yes, they do work over there, but you're going to have to check their laws over there because they may have different laws about where you can park and what you can do. The other thing is, and Lisa's right, it's good all over the U.S. in every state. The one place it is not good is in New York City. So you can't use it there, but everywhere else is good.
Interesting. Excellent. We received a couple of questions about cruises and if that was something you suggest as far as being accessible and if that was something that you suggested, and how to deal with the heat sensitivity of cruises, if that, do you think that would be an issue?
Well, cruises, yeah, I wish I could have covered them tonight, but there was only so much time. I did write an article for the Candy website, and it is up there. I kept today. So that has all my cruise tips on in lieu of, you know, being able to do it tonight. Cruises, yeah, they are very accessible. Anything, and I'm talking about ocean-going cruises from U.S. ports, all the ships have really good access to the newer ships. Also, most of them have a special needs department where you can call and get special, any accommodations that you need. And also, shore excursions, they're not so good on that. A lot of the shore excursions outside of the U.S. are not accessible. But Cruise Critic, really good resource. They have a message board that is dedicated to accessible cruises. And I've also put some accessible shore excursions up on the Emerging Horizons website, too. So there's information out there. Basically, you're going to have to try and cobble together your own shore excursions to be accessible, but it's very, very possible to do that.
Excellent. And as far as the actual beach accessibility, any tips as far as actually getting into the water, trying to find beaches that are accessible, any tips for that?
I know they have accessible beaches in Hawaii. When I'm talking accessible beaches, the beach mats, they put the beach mats down so you can actually roll into the water over the sand. They also have beach wheelchairs. Most, like, state beaches have beach wheelchairs now. Of course, there's the Power Beach wheelchairs in San Diego. That's unusual. They also have them in Gulf Shores, Alabama. Beach access has just been a whole lot better than it has been 5 years ago. I think they're finally realizing people want to get out and do something. So, just Google beach wheelchair and, whatever state you want to go to, and you'll be very surprised at how many returns you'll get for that.
And certainly I would add to that the walking sticks are great on the beach. They're really stabilizing if you're not in a wheelchair and you are just really, really wobbly like me. They're really stabilizing. And the other thing about the beach is it's sand and water. So the fear of falling, my anxiety is a lot less when I'm walking on the beach as opposed to walking on concrete. So those are two tips that I would add.
Excellent. And Speaking of the walking sticks, we did get quite a few questions about the walking sticks as well as the bike as far as where you can get them.
So as far as the walking sticks, I'm a huge fan of Amazon because it's difficult for me to go run errands. And so I got those walking sticks on Amazon. I think they were about $25, and they've just lasted forever. I use them all the time. So Amazon will have a lot of that stuff. I know they also have the cooling towels that Candy was talking about because I just ordered some. And the bike is by a company called Berkle, B-E-R-K-L-E, Berkle Bike. And you can Google them, and they're great. You can contact them. They'll talk to you about how to find a bike that you can test. They're just great people, and they really, really understand MS, and they're really looking to get people on these bikes so that they can keep biking. I actually am looking into shipping my bike next month from Colorado to California because I want to ride my bike. So I've never done that before, but I hear it's fairly simple. But it's Berkle Bike.
Berkle Bike. And do you know with the walking sticks, have you had any issues getting them on the plane? Would you recommend checking them in? Or
you know what? I have anticipated so many problems. I've anticipated them asking me about my shots. No one has ever asked me about my shots. I've anticipated, you know, questions about my walking sticks, everything. And I've never been asked about anything. So I just take my walking sticks, and the cool thing about that is you can collapse them, and if you have a bungee cord, then you can strap the walking sticks on the back of the wheelchair. And so when you go down to the beach, oftentimes my family would push me to the beach, and we, you know, stop with the wheelchair, and then we unhook the walking sticks, and there we go. So bungee cords are fabulous items for all kinds of things.
I agree. Speaking of the airport, we did get a lot of questions, as I'm sure you can imagine, about TSA and TSA pre-check and kind of what some strategies around that. Specifically, a lot of questions about power wheelchairs, whether you can take them all the way to the gate, what you should do with those, and then also medications. So any last minute tips on those two areas of airplane travel?
Sure. Power wheelchairs or any kind of, you know, power wheelchair scooters, anything, as long as you have non-spillable batteries, yes, you can gate check them. A TSA pre-check, it fast tracks you to the line where you don't have to, you know, get naked and take everything out of your suitcase in security. It costs $85, and you're usually fast-tracked to that line, not always. I know some people that have it. Personally, I have global entry, which is gets you back into the country. You don't have to go through the customs lines. You can go through the little computer kiosk, and that includes TSA pre-check. So, it costs $100, but I also have to say if you have American Express Platinum, it's free. So I basically have a global entry and TSA pre-check for free. I like them. You know, anything that helps me out in an airport to get through it faster is good.
I agree. And go ahead, Lisa. Do you have any last comments?
Well, I was just going to say again that I had a shot a day for 18 years, and I really anticipated, especially with all the heightened security, that they were going to ask me if I walked on board with, you know, 14 shots, and I had a doctor's note and everything, and nobody has ever said anything about my medication at all. And I always take my own wheelchair just because I like to have it. I don't like to have to wait around for somebody to show up with one. So, and I've never had any problem telling them to just gate check my wheelchair, you know, put one of those pink tags on it, and then I pick it up as I come off. And then I just tell them, either you need to, you know, push me down the ramp, or I'm capable today, and you can take my wheelchair, and I'll walk down the ramp. The only problem I've ever had is that they don't let your family members push you down the ramp in a wheelchair, which, for, yeah, obvious reasons. But that was the only thing that one time the guy said, sorry, you know, I have to push you if you're going to be pushed. So that's the only thing.
Well, great. Well, thank you, Lisa and Candy, for sharing your experiences. And I think Candy just brings so much knowledge about worldwide travel everywhere. And then Lisa, from her personal experience of not letting MS stop her and really traveling all over the place and experiencing life. And we really appreciate your insights. And we really appreciate all of you for joining us this evening and for sharing your experiences and your questions. We really appreciate the opportunity to bring these webinars to you. We also have a number of other resources we want to let you know about. We do a monthly e-news, which is an email newsletter, which we certainly encourage you to sign up for. We also have a program called Ask the Can-Do Team, where you can send in questions, and we'll try to pass them along to one of our MS Care experts. So if your question didn't get answered tonight, I would certainly encourage you to send in those questions, and we really try to reach out to as many people as possible. And then in our Can-Do library has all of our webinars that are archived, including tonight's webinar, as well as some great library articles. And Candy and Lisa did a great job writing about accessible travel and cruises, so I would thoroughly encourage you to visit our website, which is www.mscandu.org, and seeing those various resources, as well as the National MS Society, who we're very proud to partner with for this webinar and telelearning series. They've got some great resources about wheeled mobility options and ADA, and certainly things relevant to traveling. So definitely check that out. And then finally, we do these webinars free of charge every month on the second Tuesday of every month. So our next webinar is on July. We're already into July. That's pretty amazing. So July 12th, which again is that second Tuesday, and we're going to talk about a very important symptom of MS, which is spasticity, and we'll have a couple experts on that to address your questions on that symptom. So again, thank you all so much for joining us this evening, and thank you to Candy and Lisa for sharing your expertise, and hopefully it's inspired everyone to get out there and explore, and I really like what Lisa said about self-imposed boundaries, and we can all overcome that. And so thank you so much for joining us, and thank you, Lisa and Candy.
No, thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you. Everyone have a great evening.
You too.